Reform or revolution? After the Commune of 1871, a flourishing period began for capitalism, reaching the height of prosperity in the 1890s. The capitalist states of Europe received new vigour through expansion to non-capitalist countries through the world. Huge industrial combines and bank concentration issued in the imperialist age for capitalism. For the Marxists, this prosperity was viewed as a temporary phase. The rivalry between the great powers and the struggle for markets and the redivision of the world inevitably led to clashes between the combines and eventually to war, which would be worldwide. However, the situation was materially ripe for the strengthening of the belief in reforms. The easy manner in which the capitalists conceded to demands put forward by the workers rather than restrict their profits through industrial strife, the fact that no crisis or war had existed for over 20 years, gave rise to the idea that capitalism had changed, that it would no longer witness crisis as predicted by Marx, and that as a consequence, all necessary concessions could be obtained by means of parliamentary action instead of resort to revolution. A second international was formed in 1889, different to the first, in that its sections remained autonomous and its ideology, in keeping with the times, was reformist. It remained for Eduard Bernstein, in his Problems of Socialism, written in 1898, to supply a theoretical basis to reformism, and the two schools of thought within the labour movement became established and remain to this day. In his work, Bernstein attacked Marxism as a whole. He claimed that the idea of inevitable collapse of capitalism had been refuted by experience. Capitalism had proved that it could adapt itself to any situation. The anarchic nature of production was being overcome by the credit system, by international cartels and trusts. Further, the trade union organisations were subjecting the system more and more to their demands. By their action in forcing up wages, unions were lowering the rate of profit, which would eventually mean that no surplus value would remain. Within the Marxist school, Rosa Luxemburg, one of the most brilliant exponents of Marxism, realised that the existence of Marxist thought necessitated a reply to Bernstein's criticism. For she maintained that if the inherent contradictions of capitalism were not intensifying, and that capitalism was, according to Bernstein, progressively adapting itself to its own conditions of existence, then socialism ceased to be necessary. Further, it could no longer be supported by a scientific argument and must resort to what it had been before Marx developed his ideas, that is, utopian. Rosa Luxemburg's reply, Reform or Revolution, was published in 1899. In it, Rosa gave full recognition to the workers' fight for reforms, but insisted that this could not result in the end of capitalism and the final victory for the workers. Turning to the question of credit, raised by Bernstein as a means of fighting capitalist adaptation, she conceded that, viewed in the light of Bernstein, credit might assist the individual capitalist, but the general effect of the credit system for capitalism as a whole was quite different. Capitalist economic crisis developed from the contradictions between the production's permanent tendency to extend and the limited consumption capacity of the capitalist market. However, at the first sign of crisis, credit immediately took fright and proved itself ineffective and useless when it was most needed. For credit had the effect still of further extending production and was therefore a factor ceaselessly urging production beyond the limits of the capitalist market. Credit therefore helped on the crisis and proved itself ineffective and useless when it was most needed. It called in its commitments and thus intensified the crisis. Far from assisting in the adaptation of capitalism, it intensified the internal contradiction of capitalism by furthering the concentration of capital in the form of joint stock companies and commercial credit, weakening the vitality of smaller undertakings in the competitive struggle, thus helping to destroy them, and merely stressing still further the contradiction between the social character of production and the capitalist nature of private property. Quote, "The first step of capitalism to adapt itself to its conditions of existence ought to be the abolition of credit, therefore. As credit today exists in the capitalist system, It is not a means of adaptation, but a means of destruction, and its effect is highly revolutionary. With regard to cartels and trusts, Rosa Luxemburg admitted that they had been insufficiently examined, as it was only towards the end of the last century that they began to make their triumphant way in industry. But one thing was clear, namely that if they were to bring about any diminution of capitalist anarchy, they would have to become the general capitalist productive form. As it was, their function consisted in forcing up the rate of profit in one branch of industry at the expense of others by limiting competition. And even in this, they were successful only on the domestic market, whereas on the world market, competition and anarchy was being intensified. In addition, cartels and trusts brought about an increase in their rate of profits only by a desperate expedient, namely by letting part of the accumulated capital lie fallow, a phenomenon usually restricted in times of economic crisis. Such a cure closely resembles the disease, says Rosa Luxemburg. In a later work, Accumulation of Capital, Rosa returns to the same theme, stating this. If a capitalist market begins to shrink as a result of the utmost development and exhaustion of the world market by the competing capitalist countries, and it obviously cannot be denied that such a situation must arise sooner or later, then the artificial and partial withdrawal of capital from use must naturally take on such an extent that the cure develops into the disease itself, and that capital, already highly socialized in this fashion, reverts to a private capitalist character. The cartels and trusts intensify the contradiction between the international character of the capitalist economic system and the national character of the capitalist state, because they are accompanied by general tariff wars, which necessarily intensifies the antagonism existing between individual capitalist states. End of quote. Answering Bernstein's refutation of the Marxist theory of crisis, Rosa maintained that the economic crisis up to 1873 were the effects of sudden extensions of production and of the world market, and were not the type of economic crisis that Marx had in his mind in Das Kapital. Of such importance is this subject that it is necessary to quote extensively from her work, Reform or Revolution, and this I am now doing. As a whole, this formula fits rather to a fully developed capitalist economic system, in which the world market is presupposed as something already existing. Only under such circumstances can crisis develop recurrently as a result of the inner movement of the process of production and distribution in the mechanical fashion laid down by Marx, and without the necessity of any outward cause such as a sudden upheaval in productive and market relations. When we examine the economic situation as it exists today, we are compelled to admit that we are not yet in that phase of full capitalist maturity, which is postulated in the Marxist theory of periodically recurring crisis. The world market is still being developed. Although, therefore, we have on one hand the sudden and rapid opening up of new areas to the capitalist economic system, such as took place periodically up to the 70s and resulted in the previously experienced crisis of growth, so to speak, we have not yet reached that stage of development and exhaustion of the world market, which would automatically produce periodic and inevitable collisions between the productive forces and the limits of the capitalist market, i.e. crisis no longer of growth, but of decline. However, it follows logically from the same conditions which cause a temporary absence between 1873 and 1900 of the crisis that we are now steadily and inevitably approaching, that is the beginning of the end of capitalism, the beginning of the period of capitalism's final crisis. When once the world market is more or less developed and can no longer be suddenly extended or enlarged, and assuming that the productivity of labour power continues to increase, then sooner or later the periodic collisions between productive forces and the market barriers must set in, and then they will become more and more violent by virtue of their ceaseless repetition. Now, if there's one factor above all others which is calculated to bring us into this phase more rapidly, to develop the world market more quickly, and to exhaust it equally quickly, then it is precisely the phenomenon to which Bernstein looks to bring about an adaptation of capitalism, namely the credit system and the cartels and the trusts. These words were written in 1899. A year later, a crisis broke out where the effects were particularly severe in precisely those industries in which the credit system and the cartels were most highly developed. But it was 30 years later before the first of those terrible crises of decline occurred, leading to a breakup of the world market, national tariff warfare, and efforts towards economic self-sufficiency, and the feverish armament race for a further redistribution of world markets. Certainly a brilliant prophecy by Rosa Luxemburg has in fact been justified by events. Finally, on the question of the trade union question, which Bernstein considered would be a force to end capitalism. Rosa Luxemburg pointed out that the trade unions were essentially defensive organisations of the working class against capitalist exploitation and not weapons of offence. They were instruments of giving free vein to the capitalist law of wages, that is, the sale of labour power at its prevailing market price, rather than an instrument for the doing away of that law. She warned that the workers should not be deceived by the temporary successes of 1899. Quote, "If long stretches of social development are reviewed, it becomes impossible to close our eyes to the fact that on the whole, we are approaching times of increasing difficulty for the trade union movement, rather than times of triumph. When the development of industry had reached its culminating point, the period of decline will set in, and then the trade union struggle will become doubly difficult. First of all, the objective market conditions for the sale of labour power will deteriorate, as a result of the fact that demand will slow down, while supply will increase more rapidly than is the case at the moment. And secondly, in an effort to recoup itself, in part at least for its losses on the world market, capital will encroach more and more ruthlessly on that part of the product which should fall to the share of labour power. Because after all, the reduction of wages is one of the most important ways of retarding a fall in the rate of profit." End of quote. Rosa Luxemburg had brilliantly upheld the Marxist school against those of the reformists. Undoubtedly, the course of events had proceeded as predicted in her Marxist analysis. In 1914, a further justification of Marxist reasoning was upheld in the commencement of the First World War. But as already stated, reformism was here to stay, and it developed powerful organisations. And as a result, the 1914 event witnessed a crisis in the ranks of European socialists. A few days before hostilities, the French and the German socialists, as in the days prior to the Franco-Prussian War of 1870, pledged each other to avert war by displaying solidarity against their respective governments. But no sooner was war declared than the socialists of both countries voted support for the war credits. And what is more surprising, those considered leading Marxists, Plekhanov in Russia, Jules Guisard in France, supported the war. Socialist organisations that condemned the war as an imperialist conflict met in Switzerland as Zimmerwald in 1915 and Kunthal in 1916. These conferences were attended by Lenin and members of the Bolshevik Party of Russia.